Blog Talk Radio.
Drinking,
each and every night.
Drinking.
Time to turn off my loneliness away.
control our destiny. We owe it to ourselves to live happy eternally.
Of a beautiful sun. be brighter.
Authority, because none of you
uniforms, human bonds I bleed to. No justice, no peace, what the people say. The Indigo's finna go rise and lead the way. 154 cops, but where's that for Trayvon, Grant Rice, Mike Brown, and Freddie Gray? I don't wanna talk right now. Took another bullet to my heart right now. Everybody's gone, now they wanna sign and touch us. About the revolution, yeah, it's about to start right now.
I have advocated, and I still advocate, revolutionary changes in the structure and the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty.
Rip the chains, the American way, slaves, rip the chains, Jill Martin.
We would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Black Power Radio. I'm your host, Sheikh Al-Imam Akbar Abdullah Kareem, in the potentially fair city of Washington, D.C. We're here at Black Power Radio Studios bringing you an episode on the mass incarcerations of the black man, but yet again, the black woman. And please don't leave out far too many of our black children. Well, Black Power Radio brings you more of what you listen to radio for. We have the most informative radio talk show on the Internet, and we prove that by coming every Sunday and every Monday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And tonight we have some special guests in studio here at Black Power Radio. We have a couple of hosts and co-hosts and et cetera, bar, plus our vast and participating audience. And we want to open a few mics tonight and get on what is this living this lifestyle of black revolution under duress in the black drop or the backdrop of massive incarcerations. And we will bring down the studio right in sequential order. I wanted to welcome our beloved brother on board. Our beloved Big Warrior is in Harlem, and we have the Honorable Truth Bay. Dr. Truth Bay is out in Los Angeles. Let's see, are you there with us, our beloved brother in New York City? Are you there? Brother Warrior, power to the people. Glad to hear you. I'm going to open the mic for Dr. Critical Race Truth Bay. And we have Janine, Brother Eddie, and some others out in Philadelphia Move. And they're going to talk to us tonight. Are you there, Dr. Critical Race Truth Bay? Your mic is open. Welcome to Black Power Radio.
Black Power, yo.
And, Black Power. And we want you all to dialogue again with our guests that are out in Philadelphia. So we're going to see is Mrs. Janine's line. Are you open there? Mrs. Janine, are you there? Power to we the people.
On the move. We're and here.
And on the move.
On the move.
Welcome to Black Power Radio in the name of John Africa and all of the revolutionaries that came before us, all of the ancestors, and we're just going to leave it open for you all. And I think, Dr. Critical Race Truth Bay, you can control the dialogue as we bring you yet another episode of Black Power Radio. Power to the people.
Power to the people. Thank you so much for joining us here on Black Power Radio, where last week we had discussed the issues concerning our beloved political prisoner, Mumia Abu-Jamal. And today we join us with the Africa Nine movement, Janine, Janet, who else is there?
Eddie.
From this episode on Black Power Radio, we'll be discussing the implications of mass incarceration between Black mom, Black father, and how it affects us today. Now, Move 9 is specific because they actually went through the system of incarceration for standing up for what's right. As we take a look back as to where we are today, can you tell us a little bit about how you became involved with Move 9, Black Power?
On the move, this is Janine Africa. I became the Move organization at a young age. I was walking by a demonstration at the 16th District Police Station, which was known, had a reputation for being violent, brutal, even killing a lot of the young Black teenagers and younger men in the area. And as I was coming by there one day, I seen these people demonstrating over Bullhorn, and I walked up to them, and what made me attracted to them was the women. You know, it was something to see the men out there, but what really stood out to me was to see these women on the Bullhorn standing right up there with the men, confident, assertive. And when I saw them, all I could think of is I wanted to be like them. I wanted to be strong like them. And so after the demonstration, I stayed around and met them and talked to them and was invited to. In those days, MOVE had study sessions at our headquarters twice a week, and they invited me to the study sessions. I went and listened and learned a lot and just kept coming around and getting involved with the different activities. And it just, the teaching of John Africa just drew me in because it was something I had never heard before and experienced before. And it made me strong. It made me a strong revolutionary, a good mother, a good sister. And it just, the commitment just formed right then and there. And brought me all the way up to the demonstrations that we had in 77 when the cops was killing our babies and beating the pregnant women, you know, targeting the pregnant women. And it just moved on from there. We became involved in the 77 confrontation in front of our headquarters at 33rd and Pouton. And it went from there to starvation blockade to the attack August 8, 1978, where 9 of us was convicted to 30 to 100 years for the shooting of one cop with one bullet in the back of the neck while he was facing us and above ground and we were in the basement. But we were given that body because we survived the attack. We weren't supposed to come out of that house alive. And because we did, and they didn't kill us, they said they was going to put us in jail for the rest of our lives with that sentence. In fact, Rizzo, the mayor at the time, was in the newspaper before we even went on trial saying he was going to pull a switch. They wanted to give us the electric chair. So that's how I became involved and moved.
Now, you were 17 years old at the time when you first encountered with the demonstration.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, I was very young. And it just, I was not an active, politically active person, you know. It just came from seeing the strength and move women, and that had me learn a lot of things from John Africa. And that hearing John Africa's teaching about this system and the corruptness is what me involved in the, you know, getting into fighting for what's right. That's how I got involved in it.
Now, before that encounter, what was your childhood like? Were you aware of some revolutionary eras, or were you conscious at the time, or were you just not involved at all in any type of revolutionary movement?
No. I wasn't involved in anything. I didn't even care. You know, I was just aimlessly existing. You know, I didn't, all of the things that was going on around me, I was really blind, deaf and blind to, you know. So hearing Meet and Move and hearing John Africa break down what was going on around me and seeing it was a very awakening time for me. You know, I was your average person that just wanted to live my life and have no concerns whatsoever. You know, and that's how I was. You know, I came from we weren't poor, we weren't really middle class, you know, straight-A student, getting involved in playing instruments. I was just your average teenager, you know. But
and what were your dreams, aspirations at the time? What did you want to become, I mean, as an adult? Did you have any clue of what direction your life would take before that encounter?
Not really. I just was going whichever way my education would take me and figure it out from there. But I really had no kind of plan going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and it was, emotionally it was hard because I got involved with young, had a baby young, had to live on my own young. So I was going through a lot of emotional turmoil. So meeting Move at that time and seeing Move Women was what I needed and at the right time. Because literally I say that Move John Africa saved my life.
That's what's up. So we definitely want to know a little bit about the man that actually inspired the whole household and kept them together. So tell us a little bit about John Africa. What was his talking points that really resonated with the family?
that the teaching of John Acker, what he instilled in us was family, unity, the love, and strength. You know, he gave everybody the direction to show us that we didn't have to settle for this rotten system. Because, you know, that's what this system tricks people into believing now, saying we may not be perfect, but it would be chaos without us. And John Africa exposed it and showed us that, no, the chaos is coming from this government, this system. And if you learn, lead yourself, get strong, then you can live and survive without this system. So it was things like that, you know, to make the mothers good mothers, the men good husbands and fathers, you know, it made us a family. Mm-hmm. And that's what just brought everybody together and holds us together, you know, and having somebody that could explain all of your problems, you know, not just have you tell you that you're broken, break down why you're broken and give you the solution to fix yourself, to get well. That is what holds all moves people together like that.
That's wonderful. And that's where we want this type of movement to really resonate with our youth. Nowadays, where many of them don't even know the history of what happened in Philadelphia in 78 or 85. And so the core beliefs of the MOVE organization, what would they be to resonate for today as relevant in 2024?
On the MOVE, this is Janet Africa. What's really
Janet,
relevant
to Black Power Radio. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having us. The main thing, when I first came around this organization, I was so dissatisfied and just searching. And I found out that most people, just like back then when I came around in 72, today, because most people are dissatisfied and still searching for direction. And the first thing that John Africa taught us was about self, self-revolution. And this is what is important for everybody, especially the younger people that's out there in the struggle right now. The first thing that we were taught is in order for things to work, you have to work. And in order for you to work, it has to be a self-revolution. This can be any kind of revolution. Because without yourself being involved, knowing what's going on, direction to go, direction to give others, then this revolution is not going anywhere. See, and I don't down the youth for today for wanting to get out there and fight, because we are taught by John Africa that that is the way the system works. If you put pressure on them, it'll move them. But what is most important is for people mentally to get that mental strength, to get that self-revolution so you can move and move others, and the whole generation will move. Because most people don't really know or understand that. And when you have a cause, damn right, fight for it. But remember, always remember that self-revolution got to come first. And you got to be sincere about it, because it's important that people learn how to deal with this system strategically, like John F. taught us, strategic revolution. You get this system in a position to work against themselves, not work against us. And it's crystallized how it can be done through MOVE's example, because we fought this Philadelphia political system for years. And look what John Africa's movement did to Rizzo, what John Africa's movement did to the courts. I mean, we went through them courts like a whirlwind, you know, sent judges going all different kinds of ways because they could not back up what they have, because what they have is not the truth. It's not the law. John Africa teach us that law works the same way for everybody. The air is the law. I breathe it. The white man breathe it. The Indian breathe it. Everybody breathes air the same way. The water works for all of life, not just the rich. And the water, air, and the soil is Mu's belief. We believe in life. And people have to understand the value of life, mm-hmm. the importance yes. of self-revolution, to commit yourself to that.
Right on. Now, you grew up originally, you're not from Philly, but in New Jersey. Tell us a little bit about what was your life before you moved to West Philly.
Well, before I came to Philly, I lived in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. And I was raised in a black middle-class neighborhood, went to middle-class school. You know, I was raised up. We had money. I never wanted for anything. I went to dancing school, you know, all those things. I had no interest in revolution. I had my own car. I had a job. And, you know, I was just going about my life like everybody else was going about their lives in this little town in New Jersey. And then I came to Philadelphia. And when I came to Philadelphia, that's when I met Move. I can't remember the exact time, but what it was, somebody told me that they were having a rap session. Move organization was having a rap session down in West Philly. So, you know, I considered myself as like kind of bohemian back then, you know, like just getting involved in pretty much everything. So I went to this rap session. And when I went there, I heard some things and felt some kind of way that really touched the instinct in me. I mean, it was like nothing like I had ever heard before. And I started becoming interested in it, and I started going around to these rap sessions more and more often. And the more I went around to those rap sessions, the more I started understanding about Move Law, about John Africa's teaching. And the more I committed myself to being part of that, because I was pretty much broken when I came to Philadelphia. You know, I wasn't happy. I was involved in a lot of things that, you know, wasn't good for me, wasn't healthy for me. But when I started coming around Move and John Africa, I was given a diet to eat, exercises to do, and things that would make me happy. I mean, truly happy, not that fizzle here 1 minute and gone the next. But I was actually feeling satisfied and being happy with myself, you know, with my belief, which I knew was giving me that happiness, because all the things that I grew up having, you know, according to the system, a person shouldn't be happy or dissatisfied. Dance school, the money, the car, the schools, and all of that. I had everything that people consider they want to be happy, but I still was miserable. But when I came to move, that's when things started working for me, and I really started working, because I started feeling satisfied with myself, and I know my belief in John Africa was making me feel that way. And I think the most important thing was I was understood, because I was so misunderstood in the system. I was misunderstood by my mother, my family. I was just so misunderstood. But I didn't really realize what was going on. And then when I would talk to new people and I felt like I was understood, it was the most relief that I had ever had in my whole life.
Yes. Hold on one second. We have a need a sound check. There's a lot of background noise. If we can mute the line so we can hear our guest. All right. And so you grew up sort of like in the church. And did you see unruly behavior that drew you closer to the teachings of John Africa, or was the church resonating to same mood of what John was teaching?
No, I didn't grow up in the church. What I did was, when I was so unhappy and dissatisfied, I'm looking for direction, I went to the church to help me find this direction and guidance, and I didn't find it there. So I stopped moving that way. I stopped going, and that's when I heard about MOVE. But pretty much my life started out with the Baptist church, which when I was young, my aunt would take me there. My mother was a Jehovah's Witness, so my feet was wet in pretty much a lot of different sects of the church, but I was really never involved or never, you know, attached to that, because I did not feel that I was getting what I needed from there. I was never happy. You know how you go someplace and feel like I can't wait until this is over, you know, because it wasn't giving me what I needed. But when I started going to those study sessions, those rap sessions with MOVE, I felt like I wanted to keep going back because it was giving me what I need.
I can resonate with that. Many of us, of course, you know, some of us are going to houses of worship and we see a lot more worse than what's out in these streets. So it does put confusion growing up for many of us who have been going to church from little. And when you came upon Philadelphia, what is it that really drew you or caused you to think differently, that say, hey, there's something a little bit more than what's happening out here? Did it something that was inside of you that you felt, or was it solidified as you grew together in this household?
It was something personally that I felt myself, and it was a feeling of being compelled, you know, drawing you, like something was just drawing you that way. But it wasn't like something drawing you to a bad thing. It was something that was drawing you to a good thing, and like feeding you, making you strong, and giving you understanding, and giving you direction, making you feel love, making you love yourself. And these are the things that was absent in my life, my whole life. I mean, even though I had the things that so-called we were taught that make you happy, these things were personal to me because it's what I wanted and didn't have. And it made me feel like I was like a misfit, that I really didn't fit in with people when I was in the system, because, you know, I would see them laugh and act a certain way, like they was happy, and I never would feel that way. You know, when we had holidays or occasions that were, you know, seen as festive, you know, I would be happy, so-called happy then. But after those festivities and all those events was over, I would go back to, like, feeling unhappy, you know, disappointed, disillusioned. I didn't want to feel like that because that was a miserable, unhappy, burdened existence. It's like I felt like I had nothing. I feel like I had nothing with all that I had. I felt like I had nothing. But when I came to MOVE and started hearing John Africa's teaching, when I didn't have nothing, that's when I felt like I had it all, because I was coming out of what the system put on me and growing into what John Africa was giving me. And that was making me a strong, black, secure woman.
Amen to that. And
along with John Africa.
Yes. John Africa is someone that our young people, they definitely need to know more about the legacy that he built, and why was it different than any other message that was given, or was it the only message that was resonating with you? Was there other movement that was happening, or what was happening in 1976?
On the move. This is Eddie Africa.
On the move. Is this Mr. Edwards?
Yeah. You said 1976.
All right. Welcome to Black Power Radio.
Thank you. I ran into move before 76. I ran into move 72, 73. And I grew up in the street. I mean, I was searching, or I thought I was searching for something black. Meanwhile, I was into drugs, alcohol, whatever. And my cousin introduced me to move. I mean, I had heard about them, and people considered them wild because they weren't used to seeing an organization going up against the police or the courts like that. And so I came down and speaking to different MOVE members in Zion, Africa, and I was trying to push for a black revolution. And John Africa explained to me that revolution has no color. Everybody has to do right or it's not going to work. And at first, I kind of resisted. I'm not going for this. You know, maybe because there were white members in MOVE at the time. So I left. But then I came back. Mm-hmm. Because what he was telling me, it struck something in me. And he gave me some more information, and I could see the people around me were strong. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I was looking for understanding on how to be a better husband, a better man, a better father. And so I was doing a lot of searching. And so as he began to talk to me, things he was telling me were striking a chord in me. But at the same time, that issue about color was holding me back.
Mm.
But I kept coming back, you know what I mean, kept coming back, and eventually I had to make a decision. Either I was going to do right or I wasn't. And I decided to stay and do my work to be right. So this is what John Africa gave me. He gave me a direction, and he gave me the tools I needed to stay in that direction and be right. You know what I mean? So I remember telling my family that I intended to do this not just for myself but for my children, so that they wouldn't experience the things that I experienced. Because I ran into the police and the courts early in my life. You know, I mean, 15, 16, having cops stop you and searching you for no reason, whether you did something or not. And if you argue, getting locked up. So, I mean, I knew what was ahead for my children. And so I used that as a motivation to keep me going. And this is John Africa. John Africa took me and cleaned me up. You know what I mean? I stopped getting high. I stopped drinking. I stopped running around in the street acting crazy. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to be right. And so I give all thanks to John Africa for this. And it's still being done. You know what I mean? My life is still being coordinated by John Africa. But one of the main things he instilled in us is that you have to learn how to lead yourself, to control your own mind. You know what I mean? Don't let politicians or whatever convince you to give your power purpose to them, because they don't know how to control themselves. They looking for somebody else too. So the object is to learn what's right and learn how to control your own mind.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you so much for enlightening us on the background, because we hear the horrific bombing that happened in 85, but we will actually get to that in our second hour. Now, I wanted to know, what legacy is your children and grandchildren? Are they picking up where John Africa left off, or are they going their own way, so to speak?
Well, my children, I've always encouraged them for themselves, and I try to give them as much understanding as I can. But what it comes down to, they have to make their own decisions. Now, while I was away from them, I was still in contact with them, so I was giving them information. And so they apply some of the things I taught them, some of the things they don't, because they are living their life, but none of my children have been in jail, or they're not drug addicts, so I thank John Africa for that. You know what I mean? Because the majority of my friends, once they got to the age we are now, their children are in jail. You know what I mean? Because they work on every generation. You know what I mean? The object of this system is to take as many of our children as they can and put them in them slave camps and indoctrinate them to the point where they give up. And so I've been blessed by John Africa. That hasn't happened. You know what I mean? So I still try to give them as much understanding as I have, and hope that they apply it and do the right thing. Listen, I wanted to read a quote by John Africa about family. Is that all right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Lonely John Africa, quote, family. Move believes that all life is connected, bonded, joined together as family. As family is simply a sharing of life's law with each other. I am my brother, my sister, my mother and father, my children, my wife, my neighbors, my community. I am the earth, the water, the air I breathe, the food I eat, the trees that shade me, the birds, the fish, all other life. We are a family, all of us interacting and depending upon each other. It's God, Mama, the Creator. End quote, John Africa. Long live John Africa.
Ashe.
Long live John Africa. Ashe. I say, that was some powerful, powerful words, and it just got chills on that. Now I can see why he made an impact on so many lives, and why you guys were hated so much. They didn't want righteousness to rule, and so it made much sense of the system.
You know what the sad part is? We are fighting for them too. We're not fighting the police. The police are fighting us. The work we are doing is for their benefit also.
Absolutely. And this is why we have to band together and continue to tell the story until we all reach a level of foundation, creating a force of unity. And, again, we're so grateful to have you as our guest on Black Power Radio, sharing with our listening audience the actual history of what really happened and how Philadelphia now is today. Now we're going to fast forward to 2024. What results do you see today that has affected from the Move 9? We're going to talk a little bit about Osage, the significance of what Conrad did with purchasing the home as well. Now, do you see in today's society where you guys are, is there reflections of what has started in 1978? Is it good, bad, lingering, or people just going about their business? What do you see in your current neighborhoods that has a good reflection?
There is a lot more young people speaking up. Yeah, I mean, a lot more people speaking out against things that are going on that they know are wrong. So that is a good thing. Now, there's still a lot of young people who are victims of the system, but it's not all of them. And if that is what we try to encourage, to keep that fire going, so that the ones who have become victims can see an example and know that they don't have to go the way they're going, that they can be better. You know what I mean? That they can change.
This is Janine Africa. The impact on the confrontations with MOVE has spread worldwide, that people are telling us now, when we came home from prison and we were going around meeting the people that helped our families fight for our release, they were telling us that John Africa was way ahead of his time and that his teaching and example of MOVE influenced everybody, because they were talking about how the animal shelters, the no-kill shelters and people that take in, foster the animals, was the influence of MOVE, because, you know, we were criticized a lot of animals, but we had a lot of animals because of John Africa's teaching of loving life. When we walk down the street and see a dog starving, eating the corks out of the soda bottle cap, we couldn't leave that dog like that. So we would bring the dog home, wash him up, feed him, get them healthy, and try to find homes for them. But back then, people didn't want adult dogs. They wanted little puppies. So we would find these dogs that was, one dog was tied up in a basement, and the people had moved. He was tied up with a rope with no food, no water. We couldn't eat that dog like that. This is the reason why we had so many animals. You know, and people, when we came out of prison, they were talking to us. They were saying that example influenced a lot of people to start the animal refuges and things like that. The breastfeeding the babies, saying, you know, we were criticized for that. We were, because the government was trying to blackball MOVE to discourage people from following John Africa's example. But now, people was looking at how healthy our children are and were back then, and they knew that we breastfed our babies. So women started really getting into breastfeeding and having our babies naturally at home. Women started following that example. You know, they were just the diet, how we would eat a lot of
fresh fruits, vegetables.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that started a whole nother movement with the veganism and all of those kind of things. So the example of John Africa has influenced people for years that we didn't even realize it. You know, when we started not combing our hair, we were ostracized. We were called dirty. People was telling us that we set the black race back 300 years by not combing our hair. Now, everywhere you look, people have locks. The little kids, the actors, the football players, singers, business people. There is nowhere that you will not see a person with locks nowadays. So, you know, the food shelters. People was talking about how, you know, John Africa had us. We would keep fresh fruits and vegetables. And when we would see the kids going to school, they would be hungry, because their parents didn't have money, or their parents, you know, were addicted to substance abuse, so they weren't getting food. John Africa had us give the kids, when they would come back home from school, we would give the kids bags of food. And that's how we started that in the community of the food shelters and dispensers.
Right.
You know how to do it now. So they were just telling us how John Africa influenced the whole community throughout the years, and we didn't even realize how closely people were watching, you know. And so the example is out there and it's spreading, and despite everything the system has done to try to stop John Africa, to try to exterminate MOVE, it has failed. It has failed. The seed of John Africa's revolution is planted, and they cannot stop it.
That's
right. This is Janet.
That's
and I wanted to give another example, because MOVE's presence, John Africa's influence, was felt all throughout the community, even with the gangs. Remember the gangs? Mm-hmm. The gangs stopped fighting when they came out to evict us from our house. The gangs stopped fighting and came to MOVE in support of us. Also, another thing that we went around to make sure those places that they kept the elderly people,
the homes.
We would go to homes and make sure that the people that they had in those homes were being well taken care of and not being abused or misused. We would go around to older people's homes and sit down and talk with them. You know, so they would tell us about their mother and their fathers and their sisters, and they would tell us stories, and we would just sit there and really be listening attentively, and the stories they had were so good, how close their family was when they was young. So every facet of this system was influenced by John Africa. Every facet of in our neighborhood was influenced by John Africa. The children, the animals, the elderly. You know, we our belief was so fertile. There was a house next door across the street from us, and we would go there and have our children play there and everything. And watermelon started growing in the area that was barren at one point, because our belief is just so fertile and so true that it just influenced life. It influenced life. And that's how it was around in our neighborhood, and people really loved MOVE people. We would shovel the snow for people that were unable to shovel the snow. We'd sweep their sidewalks or help elderly people, anything they had to do. So John Africa had a big influence in that community, and that's why when they came out there August 8th, 1978 to kill us, while we had so much support from a lot of people, because they knew what they were dealing with. The system and these cops tried to turn them against MOVE and say we was dirty and we was crazy and we had all these stray dogs, but like Janine said, we had those dogs because nobody else would take care of them. They were, you know, they were just left out there, you know, and this is caused a lot of problems with the city, because they wanted to get rid of us. So whatever excuse they felt like they could use to do it, they did it, because some people complained about the dogs. Yeah. But our intentions, our direction was to get those dogs healthy and find good homes for them. And a lot of them we did. So that's one of the things that the city used to come at us, you know, about the, having animals there. But that was just, like I said, an excuse to do that, because they wanted to stop us and shut us up. MOVE,
they were just trying to find any excuse, basically.
Exactly. You know how that goes. You don't want to like somebody, you make up, you know, something in your mind to justify.
Well, you said it yourself. You said that's why they hate y'all. and you don't realize, this is Janine, you don't realize how strong of a statement that is, because that is why they beat us the way that they did. And they deliberately targeted the pregnant women, because they felt like they wanted to stop John Africa's revolution, the MOVE organization. So they did not want us having children. And they really, they beat our sister Alberta Africa. They had her down the roundhouse. found out she was pregnant, they held her spread eagle on the floor, and one of the officers, female officers, kicked her repeatedly in her vagina until she miscarried, because not only was she, they didn't want her to have a baby, but they knew that Alberta was connected to John Africa. She was the wife of John Africa, and they targeted her because they knew that for her being married to John Africa, she had so much of John Africa's teaching in her that she was a big help and influence in helping all of us that came around the organization and other people. You know, Alberta, when she would talk, people would just transfix on her the minute she start talking. And we've even had some people come up and say, she's the deep one, isn't she? Because of her connection to John Africa, and they targeted her. They always targeted her throughout the years, and all pregnant women and our men. They would deliberately beat the men in their privates and in their heads, trying to make them impotent so that we could not have any more children. And in the bombing of 85, when they had the hearing, the police commissioner at the time testified that they did not try to save the children because they saw the children as much as a threat as the adults.
Correct. Correct. And that's monstrous. That absolutely, I can't even fathom. Now, the officer that assaulted Mama Africa, what became, or do you know who it was? Were they named in any implicate? Were they charged or any of the assaults with anyone?
You know, we knew her name, and we reported it because, see, we went through all of the steps that they tell you to take, you know, and we went to city councilmen, to the clergy, to the media.
The DA.
We went up the ladder. We went through their protocol, and it was always dismissed and ignored, you know, and because we didn't have any outside witnesses, they felt like they could just say, well, that didn't happen. We investigated, that didn't happen, which is why we took the position we took May 20th, 1977, because somebody from the police station called and told us that they were planning a full, massive police attack on our headquarters. And that is why we built the platform and came out there in the open, because using the strategy of John Africa, we wanted the whole world to see them this time. No more beating us in the middle of the night. No more beating us in the courtrooms behind closed doors. Whatever they were going to do, John Africa was making them do it out in the open for the whole world to see. That was the reason for us taking that position we did, because that's just what it did. It drew the media. It drew the crowd. So whatever those police did to us during that time period, the whole world was going to see it.
And that they did. That they did.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's funny, because everything that they're getting now is going to be a changing of the guard. So all of that since 1960, the brutality our people have been going through, and we'll go a little bit about what mass incarceration was, another tactic, a new world of slavery, basically, form of slavery, which is why they impose such harsh, ridiculous sentences for each one of you, 30 to 100 years. Absolutely unfathomable. And
yeah,
so we want
to...
Go ahead. Oh, no. Go, please. Floor is yours.
Yeah, because what people don't know is that the sentence was illegal, because at that time, the maximum that you could have for third-degree murder was 10 to 20 years. So even with all of the all other charges, your time was not supposed to exceed the serious charge. The third degree was a serious charge, so your time was not supposed to exceed the maximum of that charge. And what he did, thought he was being smart, Judge Edwin Malmet, just ran all of the charges consecutively. But it still was not supposed to exceed the max that you could get on the most serious charge that you had, which was 10 to 20. You know, so, and he thought it was a joke. You know, when he sentenced us, he was laughing, talking about, and I didn't even give them the maximum. I could have gave them 50 to 200 years, like it was some kind of joke.
Just, just to give, you know, people a little bit of background on that, that was on in August 8th, 1978, police came out to our house and started tearing down our house on top of us. They started firing deluge guns. So it was the fire department, with police. They had attack dogs out there because they wanted, like we were talking earlier, excuse to get rid of Moon. So they tried to use the health code violation and whatever else they could use to feel justified in coming out there and trying to kill us. So when they did this, they fired water till the water was up to our necks. I had two children. I'm only 5 feet. And they were pumping water in our basement for hours. I was standing, and I had two children. My knees were bent, so my thighs were like a leverage for the children to stand in because that's how high the water was, and it was coming up to my neck as I squatted down a little because I was so short. His head was still above water. And then they started shooting in tear gas, gas bombs, all kinds of things into the house. Then when that didn't work, they started shooting bullets into the house. And being in the basement where we were, you could actually see when the bullets hit the pillars that were down in the basement, you could see part of the brick being cut away from those bullets. That's how close they were to killing us.
My God.
As that happened and they filled the basement with smoke, my breath, my breath felt like it was cutting off. I was taking my last breath, and when I really felt like I was taking my last breath, I swear the air just cleared and I was able to breathe. And when I be explaining that story to people, I can't tell you how, but I know it was the power and influence of John Apka that saved me from that basement. There's no way that we should have came out alive. They was firing rounds and rounds of ammunition, smoke bombs, tear gas, water. They were trying to kill us. But there wasn't.
When we were on trial, they had one of their witnesses, a sharpshooter, Officer Hurst. He testified all his credentials. He was a four-star sharpshooter. He never missed. And they asked him, what happened that day? He said, I heard women and children and babies screaming and crying. And they said, what did you do? He said, I loaded my weapon, pointed it in the direction of the screams and crying, emptied it, reloaded, emptied it, reloaded it, emptied it. So he was telling the world that he was trying his best to kill us and kill the children. He was saying it. And the other police and everybody that was surrounding the house, they shot so much tear gas and smoke in there that they had to take the police that were outside of the house to the hospital for smoke inhalation.
But meanwhile, none of us or the children or the babies got any type of smoke inhalation. But everything that they tried to do to us, they did to themselves, including shooting and killing their own officer. He was shot in the back of the head, and the bullet traveled downward. We're in the basement beneath his feet, so there is no way, no way that Move could have shot that cop, and they know it. But they railroaded us anyway, and that is how we got to 30 to 100 years. They railroaded us for murdering a police officer, James Ramp, and sentenced all nine of us 30 to 100 years in prison. And that was a definition of how Janine was explaining it to you, how, you know, what the judge said when we went in front of the judge. Meanwhile, the women, we didn't even have any weapons charges when we got in front of the judge. And his excuse was, y'all all acted as a family, so I'm going to treat you as a family and sentence you all 30 to 100 years in jail. Now, that is another point that is illegal. How did they do that? They couldn't explain that. How do you send somebody to jail without a weapons charge? But this is the kind of atrocities that Move has had to suffer because we took the position to be revolutionaries, to fight against this system, to expose this system so people could see what they're dealing with. Get rid of that smoke screen and look and see this ugly monster for what it is and what it will do when you try to show people the ugly face of this thing. I'm telling you, that is exactly why, like you said, boy, we were so hated, because we exposed every facet of the system through John Asker's teaching. So they saw us as a thorn in their side and wanted to get rid of us. And that's why they beat us. That's why they killed our babies. That's why they sent us to jail, because they wanted to shut us up. But look, here we are now, 50 years later. Still, you know, we're not hitting the pavement like we did before and doing a demonstration like we're doing before, but we're doing a lot of programs. We're getting a lot of support to other political prisoners. Move is still on the move, and we're going to stay on the move because we've committed our lives to this. You know, people can, you know, turn a deaf ear and act like they don't hear or don't see, but everybody knows. Everybody knows what's going on in the system. I mean, you know, just don't want to accept. And come on. I'm on, you know. And we're saying we're not playing any games. And we don't want people to feel bad if they feel like they can't do anything. But there is really something that people can do. You know, they can make phone calls. You know, they can stop voting. But, you know, people are afraid to do those things because they feel like, you know, they've been taught that they have to. But these are some of the things when we were coming into Move that we were taught. If you want to stop supporting, if you want to divorce yourself from the system, the things that you have to do that. And those are the commitments that Move has made to this revolution.
That's right. No fear. We got to operate in no fear.
The problem is, because of how violent the system is, people are afraid. But I remember John Africa telling us, Titian is running for office and he's not giving you what you need. Why would you vote for him? You know what I mean?
Correct. We ask that every week on Black Power Radio. Why? Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this guy or this person is telling you that they know what's best for you. If they know what's best for you, qualify it. Otherwise, get out your face. But sadly enough, a lot of people, they vote just for the sake of voting. And they just hope that the person is going to give them something that they can use. But it's been shown.
It's a force of habit. Democratic demons,
Thing about it, it's not an issue of color, because the black politicians are just as corrupt as the white. Yeah, I mean, they want them positions because them positions will get them money. them positions will get them influence. You know what I mean? And so they get them. And even the ones who have some sincerity, the political game is not going to allow them to do the right thing. A honest politician would be gotten rid of by the up politicians. You know what I mean? They can't afford to have anybody honest among them. You know what I mean? Just ask yourself, when you're around somebody who is a liar and everybody knows it, person ain't going to feel comfortable at all. And the same thing applies to if you're an honest person around a liar, the dishonest person is going to feel uncomfortable. So the politicians who come with an ounce of morality or whatever, they are gotten rid of, or they are made to take deals whether they like them or not. And the person who suffers is the people. And this is what Moon be telling people. And so when them politicians be hearing what we telling people, they get upset. And they hate us not because we wrong. They hate us because we exposing them. And that's what you're supposed to do with the corrupt person. You expose them. Let everybody see them, and you put the light on them. And this is what John Upker teaches us. You do what you can do to help the revolution go on. Like Janet said, you make phone calls, write letters, whatever. You do what you can do. And the people eventually, when they see what's happening, you make them do right or get out your face.
That's right. We gotta force them, put them to the corner because, again, they work for us, not the other way around. And we seem to have forgotten about that.
That's what they tell us anyway.
Yes. But, you know, they make up the laws. They go, that's why we got to create our own system. Self-determination has always been what our motto has been. Not only as Panthers, but any Black liberation group, it must be our own everything. We cannot be subjected to this government. So we're going to take a quick break and want to know if there might be some others, callers on the line that might want to ask a question. Do we have Sheikh Imam Akbar? The line, if we have anyone that might want to chime in and ask our guest tonight on Black Power Radio, we have Janine and Edward Africa telling us the history of what it is on the move. And so we're so grateful to have them here today and this week. So do we have anybody on the line that would like to chime in? Any questions or comments for our guest? All right, we might have some tech on our host. So we shall continue. Now we're going to go to that horrific day. We're going to hear a video of 1978.
Here we go. I've just been advised that we have new videotape of the episode that apparently ended, we think ended, the move situation tonight, the dropping of an incendiary device. And let's take a careful look at this. 5:27 p.m., state police helicopter. There is the explosion. As you can see, a very dramatic explosion that occurs 30 seconds and really rips into the move compound. There you see the bunker, which soon will go up in flames. And that was the explosion close up. Now, if there's anybody there, standing there, it's obvious they couldn't survive that explosion.
Now, when we hear media, like, reporting on this, were you aware of the trauma that happened while it was occurring before? You know, they said that there was a previous evacuation of that block because they knew what they were going to do that evening. Was there any inkling that morning or that day that gave a sign of what was to come?
Okay, so this is the thing. This is Janine. Me, Janet, and Eddie were in prison at the time that they bombed our family. So we had no clue whatsoever what was going on. The way we found out about it was some other female inmates. We were locked up in the RHU, the restrictive housing unit, which is called the hole. So we were like off the campus, locked in with no communication. Some of the girls that were on the campus deliberately got misconducts to get sent up to the RHU, where they smuggled in articles about the bombing and got those articles to us. We had no clue what was going on. And then a day or two later, the prison guards came to our cell, a lieutenant and a sergeant, came to each one of our cells, opened the door, and said, "Sue, your son is dead," and shut the door back on her. Went to Consuela's cell, said, "Consuela, your two daughters are dead." Shut her door. Came to Janet's door, said, "Janet, your daughter is dead." Came to my door and said, "Janine, your son is dead." That's how we found out about the bombing of our family. Now, Ramona isn't here, but she told us that the morning that of that attack, the kids went out shopping with one of the supporters. They went out, and on their way back in, the police had put up barricades across the street. They looked in the car of the supporter, saw the children, and let that supporter bring those children, open the barricade and let her drive in and bring those children back to the house, knowing what they had planned. They knowingly let the children back in. If they really did not want to hurt our children, they should have children in the custody or told that supporter that she could not come in and bring those children back into the house. They didn't do that. And the police knew who they were. They were the same people that saw our children go to the park every day, come back every day. They knew our family's pattern. They saw the children daily. They knew they were moved children. Why did they let that supporter bring those children back in, open, move the blockade, and let her in? Let her in knowing what was being planned. And this is what we mean when we say that they wanted to kill all MOVE people, our children included. Because people got to ask themselves that. Why would the police let the woman bring our children back to the house knowing they were getting ready to attack that house?
Because they're monsters.
And, yes. And Ramona told us that after the attack started and the fire was going on, all the adults had children like up around them trying to carry the children out. The men was hollering, "We're bringing the children out." And they were coming out carrying the kids. And as soon as the police saw them, they started shooting. They shot them all back into the house. No one seeing that house aflame, full of flame, burning hot. They knew it. They shot them back in that house and did not try to put that fire out. So you could see their intention was not to arrest anybody, not to rescue our children. Their intention was to murder everybody in that house because they didn't kill us in 1978. They came back to finish the job, and they wanted to make sure that this time nobody got out alive, and that's why they dropped that bomb and let the fire burn. You have that was working for the fire department calling and saying, when are we going to get the order to put the fire out? Firemen calling and asking about it. When are we going to get the order to put the fire out? And the police department told them not to put the fire out.
Right.
Not to put the fire out, and then lied about it when they were questioned about it, talking about, well, the firemen feared for their lives because move people were shooting at them. When one of the lieutenants in the fire department got on the stand and testified and said, we were never shot at by move people.
Right. That was clarified already for them to even state something like that.
Yes.
Monster.
Yes.
Monster.
Yes. Yes. Yes, indeed. Because that was their intention. Ramona messed up their whole thing because they already had their stories set out, what they were going to say. And Ramona and Birdie Africa comes out and start telling the truth about what happened. So it just blew everything wide open.
Right. The fact that they were being shot at, it's so disturbing to know that bombing already is overkill. But to shoot at the children and the people to make sure, that's just an extra level of evil, which is why we need to speak about it and let remind us of what type of government. If Tulsa did not tell us who runs this country, this definitely showed why we need to have our own institution, self-determination.
Yeah, and see, this is why they wanted to stop John Africa so bad, because John Africa is teaching people to lead yourself, get strong. This is what Jan is talking about, that self-revolution. John Africa encouraged us to get strong, to use the law of life, to live, not external government that's dictating to you, taking your power, purpose, destroying your family. John Africa was encouraging people to live by the true law, God's law, which instill family, commitment, health, direction, righteousness, and that could be done. And he set that example and moved people. We were the example to show people that you can go against this system and be right, because this system fooled everybody. This system ain't right. And the longer that people live under it, look how bad things are getting. Things are not getting better. They're getting worse.
Sure.
Worse.
Sure.
Yes. It's getting worse. So, you know, this is why they wanted to kill John Africa and annihilate the whole MOVE organization, because they did not want that example out there for people to see and to be encouraged by it.
Mm-hmm. And it needs to be crystallized to people what Janine is saying at their attempts to try to stop this organization, how August 8th, you know, we came out alive. They beat our brother Delbert Africa almost to death. I mean, he was beat so brutally.
The world saw that,
The world saw that, and not one of those cops spent one day in jail for what they did to Delbert. And when we went to prison, it was about a month later, we had a meeting, and they told us that they were going to bring Delbert in. And all of us was, like, anticipating and wanting to cover our eyes, because during the court case, they had showed us the film of what happened on the outside, because we didn't know. And when we saw the way that they beat Delbert, how that one officer took his helmet and slammed it on Delbert's skull, and then the other officer took the butt of a rifle and hit him in the face, we knew when we saw him that he was going to be a horrifying spectacle to see. So when he came in, you know, which was real anticipant, and like I wanted to cover my eyes because I didn't want to see what they had done to him. But I didn't. And when he walked in, all I saw was like a little bit of runny nose and a swollen eye. And when I saw him, all I could say was, long live John Africa, because of the beating, the kicking, the stomping, and everything they did to him. He did not die. He did not suffer any bad disfigurement or anything like that. And like you said, the world saw it. So according to how bad they beat him,
He should have been disfigured and crippled, but he wasn't. And
right, that's something that many people would not have survived, such a brutality such as that.
Yes, they wouldn't have survived that. They wouldn't have survived down there in that basement, coming up, being shot at. No, and we want people to know that that force that kept us alive is the force that we acknowledge, because all throughout history, whenever those kind of examples happened, those people that were in that predicament were murdered. They were killed. But Move came out alive. You know, we came out alive. And we acknowledge the force of life. We acknowledge John Africa's influence for that. And thank Mama for being alive. Other thing was that about May 13th, when Mona, she wanted to be here, but she couldn't because she has to, you know, get to bed a little early. And it's kind of late now, but if you ever have a show earlier, she would like to come on and tell you some things that happened.
Yeah.
That happened May 13th, because she told us all some things, but the part about when they were trying to come out and they shot them back in the house, she said she thought her family, the Move family, was following her and behind her. And when she turned around and didn't see her brothers and her sisters and her family, she was devastated. She said the heat out there, the heat, that's how she got burnt. She said a flame did not touch her. It was just from the heat that melted the skin off of her arms and her legs. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. And they had the audacity to arrest her as if, you know, her arm was in full tack. That alone, as a woman, to see that they didn't see us, and this is where we're going to actually go into our last hour, to break down the experience of incarceration, what toll did it have? And this is where we want, for many people who are currently behind the wall, how we have to be in the shoes of our brothers and sisters who are not out here. We have to constantly be a voice for them. So when you were first detained and when you were first incarcerated, how did you take it day by day until that time you were released? How did you cope with being in there for such a time?
I just kept my faith and my belief. You know, it wasn't easy at all. You know, but because I had a strong faith, because of the example of what my faith did for me, that is what carried me through. I'm telling you, there were some hard times, and especially the time when they dropped the bomb on our family and we were in prison and we felt like our hands was tied and there was nothing that we could do. That was one of the worst moments of my life. It was just so hard to know that children, brothers, sisters, mothers, and fathers, Move family, had a bomb dropped on and murdered like that. A holocaust, a catastrophe, and then they charged Ramona. They charged Ramona with causing the catastrophe. You know that?
Yeah.
They charged her for that. But
ridiculous.
Ridiculous. These are the kinds of things that, you know, we had to deal with while we were in prison. A lot of things that was happening that made it difficult for us, you know. But we felt like the hardships that we had been through, that something always came about in our favor as a result of these things. You know, yes, we had to deal with some hardships, very, very hardships. But look, we made it through. We're still fighting, still exposing this system, and still committed to our beliefs. This is what we committed ourselves to do. And despite all those hardships, we're still here
putting out information to people, trying to wake people up so they can see what they're dealing with. You know, we know what it's like to be in this system. You know, that's why we wanted to get out. That's why we wanted to leave, because we were so unhappy. And now that we are in the hands of John Africa, under the influence of John Africa, we have the opportunity to tell people, to teach people, and to learn about what's going on in this system, what people can do, you know, to better their situation, you know, because we don't expect people to join MOVE. We don't expect people to jump up and say they're revolutionary, but there are things that people can do to ease some of that pain that this system is inflicting on everybody, you know. And that, you know, we'll never stop doing that work. We'll never stop doing it.
That's right. You're born with it. You're born with it. And
until
we are 6 feet out there, we got to keep it moving. Was someone trying to chime in? Is that Brother Edward?
No, that was Brother Newell. I was just saying, Ashe, I appreciate these goddesses for maintaining that responsibility. I wish the rest of the world would catch on.
So do we.
That's my brother, Big Boy, in New York.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any questions for our guests this evening on the MOVE?
No, ma'am. I just need them to continue telling people so that hopefully folks will decide that we're going to clone everybody who paid the price and continue to work together so we can lighten their load and get closer to liberation.
On the MOVE.
On the MOVE. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. So let's go into the life of the legacy that you wanted to
Did you want to take any of the calls from our vast listening audience over here?
Yes. Well, thank you for joining us, we did want to chime in. And anyone call in, had any questions for our guests, a very, very important guest. So today on Black Power Radio, we have part two of On the MOVE members, Janine and Janet and Brother Edward Africa, telling us firsthand the On the MOVE movement and John Africa, exactly the legacy and the experience of the horrific issues that the racist, continued racist Philadelphia government tried to do to stop revolution with this wonderful liberated group. So if you have anyone that has any questions, definitely chime on in.
As we go there in the interim, I would just like to thank our guests again for being spontaneous, being there with so much information, updated idealism on what's going on with the MOVE today, and John Africa's, all of those that are in his movement at this hour. We just wanted to give them black power and a strong black military to block their call for revolution. And we just show so much love. As we go to 628-628, you're actually live on Black Power Radio, 628-477. You're live on Black Power Radio with our guests from MOVE, Sister Janina, Brother Edward, and et cetera, and our beloved brother, let me get his name. We have Brother Big Warrior, and we have Dr. Truth Bay. So go right ahead at 628. I think that's Frisco Bay Area. Is that Tunisia? Come on. Let's talk black too. Are you there with us at 628? 628. Your line is live on Black Power Radio. I don't know if they're there now. Let me move it right along. Let me try this. Okay, we have...
yes, I'm here in Marin City, California.
What up, cuz?
How you guys doing? I just want to say to the three of you on the MOVE, I'm glad that you guys are home and just watching a video of what happened when you were locked up, you know, and praise when they did to your families, 3 week old baby, you know, it's just terrifying, you know, and you're right, they didn't want to civilize that, you know. I'm just glad that you guys are here to tell your story, and we need to get the other two free. And I just don't understand how they locked you guys up as a family, but you guys are not released as a family, you know. It's just alarming to me. It makes me want to cry, honestly. I feel your pain. and your story, your childhood, kind of feels somewhat like you. I feel like I went through the same, you know. I'm 41, but, you know, just you're growing at 17 and, you know, the things that you said that you experienced and what you're going through, not wanting to be in politics and just how you have to move into that era, you had to, you know, do the right thing. And church don't move you, certain things don't move you, it didn't move me either. I really got more into the movement when I had to go through the court system when my son was in school. And there's a judge here. And the school, I just learned that they were set up as a prison system for our children. It's starting at third grade, that's when they really do a report on our children. And that's they can determine when our children are going to be in prison or jail, can determine the life of our children starting at third grade. And that's when they carry a report till they're at least 16 to 18 years old, which happened to my son, which is 20 now. And it's still going on, so they're putting this. Taking a kid from strong mothers like me because my son said the word nigga at school with his friends on just the yard, just playfully, which I corrected him and told him that, you know, it's the nigga, N-E-G-A, which means you are the God. But they changed it to nigger, and I explained it to my son. I fought that in court, but he still was moved out of my home and other things to his father, which is a bad system. They were trying to put my son in juvenile hall because his father realized that through child support that if the child goes to a juvenile system, then the father doesn't have to pay child support, and then the government can get their money. And so they had kind of worked together doing that. So it's going on now, 2024, you know, it's kind of movement that's going on now. It's corrupt still slavery in a way that they've done, you know, not for sure. Somebody just kind of like things where I had to get smart class. I'm like, okay, I don't want to help other mothers. I'm still fighting for it to get into my Black Power movement. It wasn't work. I had to just really just release and get the shackles off of me and understand, you know, that it's more of living here on the earth and not wait until we die. They just tell us in the Bible that everlasting life is, you know, when we die. No, our everlasting life is here, you know. We're going to be living here and move on with the movement. So just have to let you guys out here show your story and just know we need to go from here on to help other families. So thank you. I'll yield now.
Thank you.
On the move. And I agree with you. Waiting till you die to get relief is not an answer.
That's wonderful.
You live life now. You know what I mean? And you continue to live life no matter what level you're on, but putting your faith in something that happens after you die don't make no sense to me. It tells us all there is life. That's what's important. Nothing else.
That's right.
Absolutely.
This is the main answer. What I wanted to say real quick to people is the August 8th attack was filmed by a woman. She was a college student at the time, Karen Palmer, and her partner. They made a video of the whole day, and they showed that film. It has just been remastered, and she is going to be showing that for years. She did it at New York. So, you know, people can look out for it, because if you really want to see what happened that day, people need to watch that film. I don't know if she named it or renamed it, but I believe it was the August 8th confrontation. And it's really good. No media shenanigans. It's just filmed in its entirety of exactly what happened that day. So if people can keep a lookout for it, her name is Karen Palmer, and it is the August 8th police attack on MOVE.
And we can call them if when we find out.
You know, and we find out if she actually gave it a name. But yeah, if you look for Karen Palmer, and it's really good, you know, well, I won't say good. It's actual footage.
of what happened. Not no police version, not no media propaganda. It is the attack in its entirety.
Live footage on crimes against humanity.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, you know, Judge Mamet said this was the first time in history that a crime was filmed in its entirety. But what he was didn't realize what he was saying was the crime of the police in its entirety, because there's nothing on that film showing move people doing anything wrong. Everything is what the cops did. So if you want to see the crime in its entirety, watch that film.
And I just want to speak to the sister that called in to tell you to keep on fighting, because that's all you can do right now. Just don't give up. And John Axel told us that this system is no good. It don't have no worth, but you're
right.
Better fighting against them than you are giving up, because they're going to continue to do what they do. So just never stop fighting. Never.
Thank you. I won't.
That's great. No. Mm-hmm. Did somebody else have a comment before we went to our 405?
I'm just looking for the video, Karen Palmer.
Yes, ma'am. So we're going to try to call at 405-405-725-721. You're live on Black Power Radio with Move on the Move Africa. Go ahead.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. And I
saw you.
Hello.
How are you?
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey. Hey.
I'm going to tell you, it's a blessing to have been on this call this evening, because, you know, it's one thing to hear, to have a little knowledge or information, but it's a whole different plan or program when you can fill in those gappers, and I mean, wide of areas of information, and sister, I thank you. And Sister Truth Bay, I thank you. You go to the head of the class. Because, let me tell you, it is refreshing. See, I turned 74. And it
bless
is refreshing
you.
To know that the Black Panthers and the MOVE and the MOVE organization joined forces. And perhaps it's always been, I don't know. But you are reuniting, just like, what's that? It was a group. They said I reunited, and it feels so good. Exactly. Let me tell you something. It feels so good to know, because let me tell you, those people out there, those clowns, they are real, and they're not playing, brothers and sisters. And
oh,
what you experience, what you experience, yes, ma'am, only a God that we serve could have brought you to and through what you experienced. See, it's one thing to think it, but it's another thing to know it. And, sister, you know.
Right.
I'm so
that's
happy
right.
that you shared your knowledge this evening with us, and me especially. But, yes, but you have these 3%ers. You think they're playing? So it's nice to know that we are strengthened by each other, and we need to be on the move of getting some more strength with us, because we're going to need it. Thank you for your time, and I love you. Assalamu alaikum.
Lawrence, are you on the move? We're rolling up here on, okay, we've got a 240 in the house. 240-470-473. You're live on Black Power Radio with Move and our regular host. Go right ahead at 240. Okay. I've been there. 240-473.
Hello,
this is Sister Janae. Can y'all hear me? Sister Janae? Hey.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Hey.
Welcome to Black Power Radio.
You're
on the move with Move Africa already.
That's you.
That's the last one. Mute up everybody that's not talking. We want to mute everybody tonight, so come on. Okay, we got one mic on. Queen Janae is in Washington, D.C., and she's on the move as well. So come on and talk Black to us tonight. Black Power.
All right, Queen. Thank you so much for joining us on Black Power Radio. It's a pleasure to hear your voices again and just to hear you say, you know, that you honored that we're continuing to do the work here as a Black Panther, as a child of a Black Panther. My father, like I mentioned before, my father was one of the Black Panthers here in Washington, D.C. before I was even born, really. And but he always told me to, you know, stand on truth, justice, freedom, and stand up for what's right for myself and for my people. And I have the heart of a Panther. And I just want you ladies to know that your work is not in vain. That some of us young people are listening, you know, they are getting it. This younger generation gets it. They understand, you know, and they are ready. They're ready for action. They're ready to see us really do something in our communities because they're the victims of what's happening. You know, they are the victims of COINTELPRO. They are the victims of the things that you guys worked so hard to prevent in the community years ago. You know, we're not reinventing the wheel. The wheel has been turning and turning and turning, and now the things have evolved. Now we got a whole generation of woke babies. We got a whole generation of children that are forward thinking and are now standing on do for self and be self-sufficient. And my God, my father always taught me to God bless the child that's got her own, you know, and I've always tried to have my own and to also help my people and provide safe places for people of color to come and be a part of a real community, you know. And I just thank you. I thank you all. I appreciate you. I celebrate you. I want to invite you to come to Washington, D.C., we have several events going on before the Million Woman World March. One is coming up soon. It's going to be March 17th here on a Sunday brunch for the ladies. If you're in Washington, D.C., Sunday brunch will be March 17th at Premier Lounge. We're going to do a head wrapping class and a natural hair class for women, just for the girls to come out, eat brunch, have a drink, relax, you know, and celebrate us as women here in for National Women's World Women's Month, right? And we're also going to have the Sankofa International Conference on April the 6th. That's going to be a phenomenal event where we've invited people from all over the diaspora to come to Washington, D.C. and Sankofa with us. We have queens and kings from Africa that are going to be visiting us here in Washington, D.C. I just secured a fashion show, so if you love African head wraps and skirts and dresses and attire, they're going to be coming and doing a fashion show for us. So if you need me, I'm here. Whenever you come to Washington, D.C., give me a call, look me up, Shaky Mama has my information. And I just thank you. I thank you for standing for the truth. I thank you for standing for our people. You know, please tell Mumia I love him. Everything that I've done has been because I found out his story. Because honestly, when I became a Panther, I had no idea that they were still in prison. I had no idea. Nobody ever talked about them. And I'm from South Carolina. Nobody ever talks about our freedom fighters still being in prison.
Yeah, they don't try to teach it at all.
Later. you know, and then when I did, I said, oh, we got to get them free. We got to do something. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something with my time. Mm-hmm. And I am seizing the time. You best believe it here in Washington, D.C. We seize the time. We feed the whole community. We was, at one point, I was feeding, housing, and clothing people. They can't come to my house no more. But I could feed people. Okay. And I housed them. Not in my house, but I would give them shelters, places to go to, and referrals. But, I mean, it's just, you know, everything y'all did, all the programs, thank God y'all left a blueprint for us to use and utilize the power to the service to the people programs. Like, I do everything out of that book I can think of, I'm initiating here in Washington, D.C., you know, and I just thank you. I thank you so much. I can't thank you enough. I go to bed and I pray for you. I pray for the work that you've done, the legacy that you have left. You know, I've documented Shaky Ma'am Akbar's legacy in the Black Power Movement, and we're going to continue to celebrate him in his life. He's alive. You guys are living. You're living legends, and you need that support. You need people to know about the work that you've already done. And the sacrifices that have already been given to us. You know, I feel ashamed that at 46 years old, I didn't know so much until I met Imam Akbar, and he taught me about everything I know now. I learned it from him about the struggle of our people and the oppression of our people, you know. And Akbar, you don't even know what today is. Today is the anniversary date of our first mission when we went to Durham, North Carolina in 2018, I think it was. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
18 or 19 with, for the case on Gary Kimber. When that, we saw the video of that boy hanging in that tree, that saved my life. That changed my life because I witnessed it for myself, what our people are going through in this country. You know, in 2024 and 2023, and people don't know it. And now people just like, they just now catching on that they've been hanging Black folks, and they ain't never stopped. They never stopped hanging us in trees.
Never stopped.
Never stopped doing these things. They never stopped putting us in prison. They don't have a punch bowl. Now they got a prison house that they're putting our men in and our women in, and they're suffering from it so horribly. So, like the Malcolm X said, we can't do it all, but we can do something. And I'm doing my part, and I'm not being a part of the problem. I want to be a part of the solution for our people. Mm-hmm. So I just thank you all. Thank you for your revolution. Thank you for your evolution in my life. And I thank you, Akbar, will continue to answer that call, Shaky Ma'am Akbar. He's a good man. He's been going through some stuff. You know, brother, I know you're going through some stuff, but just keep holding that line and keep being who you are as an Imam and as my friend and comrade in this revolution. We're going to keep fighting. I got your back, brother. I need you to know that on this radio show, I got your back, you know. Just keep holding that line. All right.
Right on.
All power to the people, y'all. I'm here. I'm on a Zoom.
On the move. Thank God.
On the move.
Queen, your work Queen Janae. And then there's another a Philadelphia press we want to say about the fact that Sister Philea, the Queen Empress Philea out of Philly, is bringing that million woman to Washington, D.C. And I just wanted to put a footnote on the fact that we went to Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, and saw where the man was hanging in the tree. And it was one block from the Ku Klux Klan's headquarters. And the Black Panther Party went there and made such a great difference. They invited us down to the city council and ready to give us the keys to the city. The mayor was calling on the chief of police there to give an explanation on what had taken place, et cetera. And the chief of police had a film, and she was fumbling and stumbling so bad that the
the mayor turned it over to the Black Panther. He said, "Why don't you let the Black Panther Party come up here? And you come back next month." Yeah, that's how that went. And that chief left out of there and went to Atlanta, became the chief, and fumble and stumble in Atlanta. And flipped out of Atlanta, where they had bed bugs eating up the prisoners in Atlanta. And all of those fumbles up Fulton County, Atlanta, Georgia. And the same police chief went on over to Memphis, became the chief. And that was that big headline where her gangsters, the Scorpions, beat up a young black man was beaten to death in Memphis. And she said that was her hand-picked squad that did that. And they had been warned. She had gotten calls and complaints was on these officers, five of them. They said they come out of the Omegas or something like that. They come out of D.C. off of Howard. Some call it Howard University. So these things, these dots are connected, brothers and sisters. You can run, but you can't choke and hide from the truth at this hour because we're on the move. And we love having you on the move. We're getting so much information tonight. And y'all need to use that to liberate and free us from a peculiar brand of modern enslavement. It's what we're living under here and now.
That's
you must
right.
free. You must go free for yourself. And I'm on the move.
Right.
Black Power.
On the move.
I believe Janine or Jeanette was about to chime in, or did you, for the Edward, did you have something to say? Did you check?
No. I wanted to say, when you're dealing with bullies, if you don't fight back, they're going to keep on doing it. You know what I mean? So it's in your favor to fight. Because an ass
whooping, line.
Get knocked down, you get back up. You don't lay down there. Because if you lay down there, they just going to put their foot to you. So when that bully knock you down and try to use his foot, you tear it off. You know what I mean? This is we in a situation now. And they not trying to hide it. To the issue of political prisoners, when you come in to these jails and they look at you as special because you speaking out, they're going to try their best to mistreat you. You're going to be in a hole a lot. You know what I mean? You're going to be denied even a few things that prisoners get because they're trying to break your spirit. You know what I mean? But when those situations happen, you stand up taller. I remember when we went to jail, the guards told us they were having meetings about us on how to deal with us because they had been told that we were crazy, that we might stab them at any moment. You know what I mean? The people who control them lied to them about us in order to make them our enemy before they even met us. Now, we do believe in self-defense. Ain't no getting around that. We will defend ourselves. But
absolutely.
The thing is, all the political prisoners you see who are in jail, they get mistreated more so than the average person.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why we have to be alert, you know, keep an eye on them and work to bring them home. Because if the prison have their way, they'll die in there. And all the time they making money off of us. That's all it's about. They're not concerned about whether or not you did wrong or if you didn't do wrong. They making money off of you. They are living off of you, taking care of their families, sending their children to special schools, using you or misusing you, really. You know what I mean? So this is John African tells us, if you're going to do what's right, you better best to get started. And remember, if you don't speak up now, then you will be the next victim.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can't complain.
Yeah.
At that point, it's too late.
Okay. That's your
facts.
Right.
On the move.
And we want people to really understand what you really represented. For those who may not know, On the Move is a lifestyle. It's not a group of people that decided to just to fight the revolution. No, it literally, when I look at the principles of what you stood for, I'm going to read a couple of your standards. Which are belief and practices. And it's a family that's strong, serious, that developed and was founded on these principles. And since Sister Ramona is not here today, I actually wanted to play a clip of her speaking on who John Africa is, and who he was in the spirit, and who he is continuing to be in all of us.
John Africa was teaching people one very simple thing, that life is the priority. There is nothing more important or more powerful than life. We're not talking about life in an abstract sense. John Africa teaches Move that life without any categories includes animal life, human life, plant life, the air that we must have to breathe, the water that we must have to drink, no matter how much champagne you can afford, got to have water. You know, the earth that feeds all life, you know, the coordination of all life to interact, to keep life moving, you know, the sun that warms and brightens the earth. You know, that's what's important, not things, not things. And if you understand the all importance of life, of all living things, then you are intolerant of anything that goes against life, meaning anything that maims, kills, imprisons, enslaves, exploits, poisons, pollutes life. You are unequivocally opposed to those things because you understand how dangerous they are to life, to your life. And that's really, you know, the basis of Move's belief.
That is beautiful. How relative does that ring true to us today, these principles? The name MOVE is not an acronym. And I honestly, I thought it was. I thought it stood for something. But it literally means movement, that if you're not moving, that you're dead. And I think that is such a beautiful thing to remember. Elaborate a little bit on that, if you can.
Well, this is Janine Africa, and that is what John Africa teaches, that movement, activity is life. All life moves. The air moves. The water moves. The sun moves. The moon moves. It all moves and keeps generating life. If they was to stop, all life would stop. You know, your heart moves. If your heart stops, then you have no more life in you. So that is why John Africa named the organization Move, Movement, because that's what we're about, generating revolution, activity, movement. John Africa have a saying that we taught our kids, activity makes you healthy, stagnation makes you sick. And our children would say this every day as they was working, moving and walking, because you have to move. Your whole body has to move, and you don't realize how important it is until certain things in your body stop moving, stop working, and then you're in distress. So John F. is telling you to follow the law of life that generates the strength in your body, in the air, the water, the soil, that keeps all life alive, no matter what color, sex, species. So, you know, that is the belief we believe in, you know, the sun, the air, the water,
Without that life force, nobody is here. Democrat, Republican, Catholic, Protestant, it would be non-existence without the power of life, God.
You know what it reminded me of? When Janine started telling you the children, how they would say activity will make you healthy, stagnation will make you sick. They were little children, and they started singing that, and they would go down, like be going down the street. Activity will make you healthy. Stagnation mm-hmm. will make you sick. From babies, we were instilling John Africa's belief in them and teaching them how important life is, why they didn't have prejudices when it came to life, no matter what gender you were, no matter what color you are, because we taught our children John Africa's belief that all life is the priority, and you treat life with reverence, with respect. And that's why our children were as strong as they are.
Love it. We need to write that more. Yeah.
We have another caller
now, there was
on the 30.
Oh, go ahead.
Did you want to take a call or wait? You want to take a call?
Let's take a call and then go talk.
You have another call. We have a 301 area code. It's 682. 301 is 682. You're live on Black Power Radio.
Black Power, Black Power. How are y'all doing tonight?
Black Power, Black Power.
Salute, sisters, for holding the line, and that I'm sure is quite, some ordeal to have to go through, I respect the holding the locks. That's the covenant. I got the same here. It's the revolution. It's all about the revolution. They want genocide. That's what it is. They want genocide for us, down to the roots, That's what, so it, just like Tulsa, I feel the same as Tulsa. So I'm here for y'all sisters, Black Power. Black Lightning, your revolutionary voice of the people, standing by, and we have keep the revolutionary train rolling, and I'm glad that y'all are here out here with us, and free Momia,
free Momia.
Absolutely.
So,
that's right. So we are the Black Revolutionary.
Speaking of Malia, we wanted to keep it in people's mind that his situation is critical, and is serious, and people, please don't relax on this. Keep it. In the urgency of your mind, because he is really dealing with some serious issues here, and we need people to keep pressure on Larry Krasner, D.A. Larry Krasner, because he has the authority to release Mumia right now, like he did the 14 other people that came to his office asking for relief. That's the Integrity Unit, and that is their job, to deal with cases that has clear signs of judicial misconduct, and Mumia's case is riddled with judicial misconduct, and he should have been released. And people, please keep the pressure on Larry Krasner to get our brother Mumia out of there and all the other political prisoners. But right now we're saying Mumia, because his case is blatantly a travesty of justice, and we need him out of there. He is suffering from sclerosis of the liver, diabetes. He had a open heart bypass surgery. He's lost weight. He's lost his hair. His skin is suffering from the results of the hepatitis C, and he needs our help. He needs relief.
They're trying to assassinate Mumia. Simple as that. Medical assassination. You know,
medical neglect. Yes.
Medical. They call it neglect, but we call it assassination. Both are. They're trying to kill him. They're definitely trying to kill him, and they do it in a very devious way because that's what they did to our brother Delbert Africa. That's what they did to our sister Merle Africa and our other brother Phil Africa. They assassinated, medically assassinated them in prison. People have got to look at and see what's happening. The thing is, because the system got so many ways that they bob and weave, they have people thinking when a person's in a hospital and they're under the attendance of a doctor that they must be getting good treatment. But that is not true when it comes to political prisoners. They are not getting good treatment. They are getting treatment that's causing them to die. My brother Delbert came home and died 6 months later. When he went to the doctors, when he came home out here, they said, "What did they do to you?" He had all kinds of medical problems, and the doc here outside of prison was saying that a lot of the procedures that they did to Delbert, the majority, that he did not need to be done, and that is what caused him to die. So he was walking dead before he even got out of prison. And then they put him out, and 6 months later after he came home, he died. Our sister Merle, they murdered her in prison. And our sister, our brother Phil, they murdered him in prison too. But they tried to make people think that it was because of medical problems. Yeah, the medical problems that they caused. And we want people to be aware of these things and watch for those political prisoners that are coming up with all these different kinds of diseases and different types of medical problems, terminal illness. This hospital, the doctors all are in cahoots with this government to try to murder political prisoners. So this call is to free them all. But Mumia, he worked and fought hard for the MOVE organization. And we love Mumia. He's our brother. And this is why we are fighting so hard for him. We need people to contact the district attorney in Philadelphia, Larry Krasner. Address is 3 South Penn Square, Philadelphia, PA, 19107. The phone number there, 215-686-8000. The email is justice@philadelphia.gov. We need people to show their support to Mumia. Write Krasner, call him. Whatever you can do to put pressure on him to release Mumia, because he can do it. Also, we need people to write Mumia. Mumia's address is Smart Communication / PADOC. Mumia Abul Jamal, AM 8335 SCI Mahanoy, that's spelled MAHONOY, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33733. You can send him letters to let him know how much you support him, how much you care about him, you know, because Mumia, they consider him the voice of the voiceless. He speaks up for people. And now it's time for us to for him. But if people do decide to write him or send him a postcard, make sure you put it in a white envelope, because these people are so petty, they want to try to stop all the mail they can from people feeling support and loved by us, that they will send the letter back or Mumia won't get it at all. So all mail sent to that address needs to be in a white envelope. And people... He needs our support very bad, so people can step up and just like a postcard. That's all. Okay. I know people are busy, they got families, they got jobs, and they have a lot to do. But we need to come together, and there are things that we can just step outside of our box and take 5 minutes to do to show the support, appreciation, and love for one another. And it's not just Mumia, it's all political prisoners. What's the call?
Primo.
Okay. All right, so we definitely want you guys to please start writing your letters because, again, his birthday is coming up and it's not getting any better. And the more pressure that we apply, the more attention that we can bring, the better. So we definitely want to make it a point, family. You said a postcard will be accepted as well?
Yes.
Okay. All right. But so let's start getting writing, family. Let's start to write.
I just want to say, that I love how Michael Africa Jr. states that we are peaceful people, but we are all are defensive people too. And you know, when people get those things confused because they equate fighting or defending yourself with violence, and it's not the same. So I just wanted to just keep moving forward with the on the move movements and try to see how we can just get our other two free and keep going strong as one. We are people.
All
not
right.
The end, not the
to
end tonight.
I'd like
I
to add, if I could, an opportunity to get the word out or to assist in getting the word out by inviting you someone, a spokesperson, to our blog radio station program, if that's okay. I would love to have you or someone to come on and help with the word. See, the more that we can spread the word, the more people we can reach. So, and we were just having this discussion last week about political prisoners. We need to be able to get the message, the word, what called, disseminated. So if it's okay with you guys, Sister Truth Bay, I'll be in touch with you to see if this is possible. I'm not going to say anymore because my phone is going out, and before it does, I'm going, good night.
All right, on the move.
Well, thank you so much for being on Black Power Radio. If you'd like to continue to support Blog Talk Radio on Black Power Radio, you can donate at $77Bakers. That's $77Bakers to keep more information on this platform that you will not hear anywhere else. So join us every week on Sunday and Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, right here on Black Power Radio. So tonight we have a very special guest, part two of On the Move members. And today last week we had Sister Ramona with us, but today we have Sister Janine, Sister Janet, and Brother Edward Africa, and they have dropped so many great gems, inspiration, things that we may have never known, and we want our young people to know that the struggle still continues and we must be on the move. You can't get any better than that message. So we want to say long live John Africa on that. So you like any questions or comments? Anyone like to chime on in on any instance that we have missed? I do want to touch base on events, considering what they did with the remains of the children. Penn State, I believe, they did something that was unthinkable with the remains of the children. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like? What was that issue?
Well, this is Janine Africa, and like I said, my son was in the house, Janet's daughter was in the house, my sister Rhea Africa's son was in the house, and Consuela, who passed away last year, her two daughters were in the house, and we were in prison when all of this took place, so we didn't have anything really hands-on to do with the different arrangements that was supposed to have been made with the remains of our family. But we were told that they were, the children and the other, our other brothers and sisters was given to the relatives, our relatives that were in move, and they were taken care of. Now, this was almost 37 years ago. And then we just find out 2 years ago that Penn Museum had the remains, Dr. Munn was using the remains of our children to teach criminal forensics. And they've been keeping the remains in a metal box in her office. And she would pull them out and do videos, supposed to be teaching videos about forensic criminal forensics. That is a blow because, you know, all these years we've dealt with what happened to our family, our children, and then have this like a slap in the face that you are desecrating the remains of our family. So that was one story. Then they tell us that, oh, okay, we're going to release the remains to you. And they gave the remains to our sister Consuela, her daughter. We did a ceremony with the remains with Consuela when she passed away. And now they're saying those weren't the remains. They still got the remains somewhere in a room.
That was insane.
You know, so they are bouncing this back and forth about these remains and telling us different things. But no matter what they're saying, their story is you are still desecrating the remains of our family. And it just goes along with what we've been saying all night. This is how much they hate John Africa move, that they would do something like this to the remains of our family. When will it stop? It won't stop because that's how much hate they have for us. Do you know how hating, you have to feel the hate to do something like this to people's remains, children's remains? You know, so, you know, this is a hard cross to bear, but we are dealing with it because that's how strong John Africa has made us and our faith, that we are not letting anything these people do tear us down, beat us down, and make us stop. We're just going to keep on fighting. Just keep on fighting them. But it's an example for people to see just what kind of government system that we are living under, that they can do this to people with no remorse, no conscience, you know. So, I mean, this is just like hearing about having that 37 years ago. We've just been having this bomb dropped on us over and over and over again. But just like we made it through back then, we're going to keep making it through now. There's nothing they can do to us to make us stop fighting, make us stop believing in John Africa.
Right on.
It make people, you know, see how much they hate move. And you already know why, because anytime you try to expose this demon, this system that we expose through John Africa's teaching, they're going to try to shut you up. They're going to try to put you down. But they will not stop. I want to, you know, tell you something. It's very upsetting, very emotional. The medical examiner, somebody that worked in the medical examiner's office said when they went in and got the remains of our children, of our family, they took them and scooped them up and was playing hockey with them.
Oh, my goodness.
With the remains.
What?
Yes. This is
the
kind of attitude that these people have to move organizations and still have. They will not stop. They will not stop while we have breath in our body, and they will not let the remains of our family rest in peace. They won't stop, and neither will we. We're not going to stop fighting.
Thank you.
You are not going to stop fighting this. We will not let the lives of our family, we will not let the remains of our family just dropped, just left alone. We want people to know the lengths that they are going through, and they won't stop to try to shut us up. Now, that should show you something, because if we was just ragtag and didn't have the power from John after to expose the system, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. But they do it
because
they don't want us to influence people against them, to see them for what they really are. That's why they're so desperate. And, you know, want people to understand that. And that's why Moon continues to fight and will never stop fighting, despite what they do.
They come hard, we come harder.
You got to. Because they're never going to stop coming hard, people. They're never going to stop coming hard. So the best thing you can do is come back as hard as you can. Come back as hard as you can. But understand, John Acker taught us how to be protect ourselves. Don't put yourself in a position where you're going to get yourself hurt. If you're surrounded by 100 cops, you ain't going to start swinging. You know, just do what you got to do to protect yourself, to expose them.
Right.
You know, and this, see, these are the kind of things, the strategic revolution that John Acker teaches us, things to get this system to turn against itself, to turn against their maniac selves. And this is the work that we will continue to do no matter what. And we want people to understand, you know, a lot of people, you know, despise this system and don't and can't get involved the way MOVE is involved. We've committed our lives to this, but there are things you can do, and don't be scared. Don't be discouraged. Do what you can. Do what you can. And that will be appreciated because, you know, it's like termites that's coming through a piece of wood. You can't see them termites coming through, but when they do, you feel their presence. And it's the same way with people. We are coming through that wood. We are coming through. And when we come through, the system will feel the presence. But, you know, people got to know what they're being guided to. And this is what John Acker did for us and is still doing for us. It's guiding us to that so we know what's going on. We're not fooled by this deception. So, you know, just watch your back. Be aware and know that this system is not your friend.
No, they're not.
That's right. Be vigilant all the time. If we can, there are some background noise. We definitely hear a little shuffling, but I wanted to make sure that we hear 100% listening to our guest today. We have Janine and Janet and Edward Africa that is gracing us this time with information that we need to move forward. And I can't tell you how inspiring that you are, but we definitely want you to be a regular. Tell us some current events and how we can support you. Is there a website or is there something that we can call, donate? Can you tell us how we can support you at this moment?
Right now we have a good supporter, Ori Lumumba. He keeps things going on his Facebook website. So people can go on Facebook and check him out. He posts things for us, any statements, any events that's coming up. You can find that on his website and also on Ann Lamb's website, Jericho, New York Jericho. They post a lot of our things, you know. Email, I have an email address that if people want to get in touch, let us know about anything. My email address is Janine Phillips, J-A-N-I-N-E-P phillips2019@gmail.com. So you have a couple of ways to get in touch with us and find out what's going on, you know, and we're here. Does anybody want to get in touch with us?
We want to do a program.
You know, we do a lot. We'd rather prefer to do a lot of programs over the phone or Zoom, you know. But, you know, it depends on it. Sometimes we do come on out. But, you know, we have to get permission. We can't just show up. We are on parole. So we have to always notify the parole agent when we if we want to go out of state. So you have to keep that in mind. So, you know, but we're always here and willing to do radio programs, Zoom programs.
All right. Well, thank you again. And we wanted to ask you a little about the Reclaim Osage. Reclaim Osage. What currently is going on with this movement? I believe Mike Jr. decided to purchase the house. He's not here today. We would love for him to speak directly, but if it's something that you'd like to touch up on.
Well, we're not involved in that. We really don't know the background story about that. You would have to ask him about that, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, we do have some clips on there for those who may want to know, because Reclaim Osage is symbolic. And I feel that the fact that they had to make him go through the ringer just to buy the home based on their hatred for us is just a telltale sign that we got to continue to fight. So while I pull up that clip, do we have any other questions, comments, or closing remarks?
Yes, this is Brother New World. Odette.
On the move.
Hello. The people. On the move.
Hello.
Yes. This is Brother New World. I'd like to share something with you all. May I?
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, what I wanted to say is move. Taught humans humanity again. This is what those devils hate. So I wrote something, and it's pretty much appropriate for this. The piece is called A Murderica the Wretched. It simply says, looking back on a murderica's history, such a sad and dismal lie, claiming greatness for crimes against humanity, for centuries against the children of the Most High, still lying, cheating, and stealing internationally like the devils they are. With their massive pretense of humanity, as we diasporic Africans suffer from your earthly presence here, shedding tears only for pets and Russians, not for people, not for my people, will we ever see these devils cry. Shouldn't we be fed up with the murderous marathon of global crimes against crimes against nature and humanity, while pretending to be the world's moral authority, killing men, women, and children globally by creating poverty consistently right in front of you and me, who turn our heads pretending not to see this diasporic, felonious, tragedy, travesty, barbaric, global, inhumane tyranny. These devils' greatness is but a fantasy, for sure. The truth is that these goddamn devils are the worst disease the earth has ever had to endure. Ashe. And remember this, family. Bullies don't stop. They must be stopped.
Yes.
On the move. On the move. Ashe. Ashe to that. Thank you, Brother Warrior. You always sit in there. We needed that. So let's round it off. We have a few more minutes on Black Power Radio, and we wanted to go into the update of Reclaim Osage. Closing comments, and again, thank our guests, Janine, Janet, and Edward Africa, for sharing so much love on it. We love you guys so, so very much. This is why we want our young people to understand that there is a way to continue the fight, and we need to hear you often to give us this inspiration, because seeds of life. They need, they really do need life, and this is the only way, by hearing it live and direct from you, that we can't match that type of learning. So again, appreciate you so very much. So
Thank you. Just recently last year,
we had, I believe Mike Jr. was purchasing or on the way to purchase the home, and I buy rightfully so. So just a little quick hearing from him directly in the past interview, just the issues that he had to go through, even to this day, recently, about a year ago.
So after the bombing, the city turned the property, well, they took the home from my great aunt Louise James, who was the owner of the house, and her son, Frank Africa, he died in the house. Louise was the sister of John Africa, my great uncle. And, you know, move was in the house. And just as much as the neighbors wanted move out of that house, my great aunt Louise began to want them out too because of the conflict and whatnot within, you know, just internally infighting. And the city, after they dropped the bomb, they took the house through eminent domain. And then they turned it into a police substation. Wilson Good sent welcome back to the community letters to the residents after their homes were rebuilt. And my great aunt never received one of those letters. Once they had the house, once the city had the house, they turned it into a police substation. It remained that way. A developer came in through this gentrification sweep in Philadelphia and sold it. The city sold it to them for $1. I called the city and said that I'd like to buy the house. It's our house. And the solicitor said, we're not selling the house to you for any money. You're not supposed to have this house, not even $1.50 or $300,000. But what happened, how I got the house, was the person that lived in the house that bought it from that developer, he told me that I saw him on May 13, 2022. He saw me on the street. We were doing our annual commemoration for the lot that was stolen. And he reached out to me and said that he couldn't get any peace living in that house. He said every time he turned around, every time he opened, he said me and my wife don't even use the front door because every time we do open the door, our camera's in our face, you know. So we don't have any privacy. We went out. Do you want to buy the house? And I tell you, it was like, now they say like birthing a baby. I've never birthed a baby before, but I've heard about it. I've seen it a couple of times. It took 9 months. Typically, it takes 45 to 60 days, but it took us 9 months to actually close on the property just for a down payment. But the seller is not a developer. He's not a city person. He's just a regular average citizen, and he sold the house for market value, which turned out to be $400,000. So I was able to put a down payment down, but I was not able to come up with $400,000. So now I'm hoping that the city and what I'm calling the Reclaim Osage campaign, I'm hoping that they will support the efforts to pay the house off. It will be great if they would take some of that excess money that they use for non-healing projects and help heal in this situation.
There you have it. A police substation. You can't get any more disrespectful than that. But it goes to show you their mentality. There is absolutely no compromise, family, with the opposition. Zero. They have been like that since the beginning of time. They will continue to operate in that spirit. And what we must continue to do is to live righteously, is to organize, is to love one another. We all we have. This internal division, external division, slave syndrome mentality, a lot of it affects us greatly when it comes to advancing and being progressive. We must recognize this and nip it at the bud, which is why it's so important that we continue to understand our history, our past, so we can continue into the future into something different. And so this is a lesson for us to learn. I really do think I want to follow up also, see what the update is and have some support. I don't think at all that they should have any issues if they want to repurchase the house. But, again, this is a system that we live in. That's the choice that Mike Davis Jr. Mike Africa wanted to do. then we want to support him as well in that effort. So with that being said, we are rounding off with our last few minutes on Black Power Radio and with our very special guests, Janine, Janet, and Edward Africa, as he's telling the story of John Africa. Is there any last-minute quotes or anything you'd like to share concerning how the audience needs to remember great, he doesn't call himself a leader. I distinctly remember he didn't like using that word leader. Coordinator was more of the title, right?
Yes, coordinator.
Absolutely. So we got to start coordinating.
Not call himself a leader. I'm just going to close up with the insurance policy of John Africa. No, okay. What did you want to do? Because you just,
spoke on the issue about leadership, and you're right. Our coordinator, John Africa, doesn't believe in leading other people. So he taught us to lead ourselves. Each person is responsible for their life. Now, I can give you understanding, and you can give me understanding. But the purpose of the understanding should be to strengthen you so that you can take control of your own life.
Mm-hmm.
A quote that I wanted to give you before this is over with is about law. And this is a quote of John Africa. Quote, "The law of life is the law of move follows. There is no law more powerful or stronger than God's law, the law of mama."
Mm-hmm.
"The law of mama supplies to everyone equally, regardless of race, sex, or class. Mama's reign falls on all equally. It is the law of mama, God, that locks the sun and moon into its connection with the earth, with life." End quote. Long live John Africa.
Long live John Africa.
Long live John Africa.
I wanted to read that because the object is to show people what's real and what isn't real. Yeah, I mean, the law of man, it changes. It applies to certain people and others that don't. You know what I mean? You have so many instances where people of influence or money can commit crimes and they walk away. You commit the same crime and you enjoy life if you're not dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So John Africa is trying to show people we are all connected. You know what I mean? Now you can absorb that connection, or you can go against it. If you go against it, you will be confronted and exposed. But our power lies in us doing things together.
That
you know what I mean? And becoming just one force. And if we do that, we will get what we need, and what's necessary to be right will be there for everybody.
On the move. So in memorandum of John Africa, Nick Africa, Teresa Africa, Conrad Africa, Rhonda Africa, Raymond Africa, and our beloved children, Tree, Netta, Delcina, Little Phil, and Thomasa. So we must remember that we are all Africa. And we are so eternally grateful to you for being here and inspiring us. With that, our host, Sheikh Imam Masfar.
Hello? I just want to say one thing. I just think you just popped up online.
Yep.
Can I say one thing real fast?
Let's do one last shout out to those who want to actually, because we want to remind people to please write to Momia, because this is an ongoing campaign. We cannot sleep on this at all. So if you want to write to him, again, it's SmartComPADOC, Mumia Abul Jamal, 88335 SCI Mahoney. Is it Mahoney? Did I pronounce it right?
Mahanoy.
Mahanoy, Mahonoy, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33733. And make sure that it is a white envelope, so we have no issues of having anything sent back. But please, flood the calls, call Larry Krasner, the DA, tell him to free Mumia, right. Let's not be complacent on this, because he represents all our political prisoners who have been